The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Wednesday, the 29th of January, 2020. On the podcast today, Vadim Alexander, Head of Healthcare at SP Angel, discusses Polarian Imaging. POLX is ticker there. And of course, they released positive results from their pivotal phase 3 clinical trials today. Also on the podcast, I'm Alan Green. We discuss Bluefield Solar Income Fund, Cranswick, which we argue about a lot. Just my opinion. My wife says I'm over-opinionated. And AstraZeneca. Plus, as always, I have two lists for you. The top 5 most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. And the top 5 most liked RNSs too. You can see both these lists, in fact, top 10 versions of both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Tired of using different sites to research companies? Vox Markets aggregates key financial details, pricing data, and company news into one place. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Vadim Alexander, Head of Healthcare at SP Angel. Vadim, thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Now, we're going to speak to Richard, hopefully, CEO of Polarian Imaging, but of course he's in the States, so it'll be later on, maybe tomorrow, hopefully. But it's good news out. Before we get into the news, the positive data from the Phase 3 trial, for people not familiar with Polarian, can you just explain, summarise the business for them, if you could, Vadim?
Yeah, basically, Polarian is a pulmonary medical imaging business, and they just completed phase 3 trials, which I've read out today, and that was to test their lead product in this area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And so what did they have to do? Because in my mind, it was the phase 3 trials, when it comes to drugs, can still be very high risk. Because I've always said several times, when you're testing a drug on a human or, say, 100 humans, it can react differently with all different humans. But this is different because it was essentially, of course, there was xenon gas involved. That's why it was involved in this. But I mean, it was machine against machine. Was it? So Polarian's tech, which is relatively new, it's 3D, it doesn't harm humans, against a 40-year-old tech that was radioactive and 2D sort of imaging. And so it was a bit of a no-brainer, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the results came through very clean. So what you're doing is you're just trying to show equivalence to an existing technology and an existing lung scan technology, which is this radioactive scintigraphy. And that's exactly what they've shown. They've shown that their technology is equivalent. And you're absolutely right. So taking a step back, explaining more about what the product is, it is a drug device combination, the drug being xenon gas. Xenon, which is non-radioactive, is just a noble gas, actually, that does nothing, it causes no harm, is polarized by Polarian's machine, which is the device in the drug-device combination. Mm-hmm. And then that polarized gas is inhaled by the patient in the MR machine, and then the MR scan sees the gas in the image. And then what their USP as a result is that it's not a static image, indeed, exactly as you're describing. Scintigraphy, the comparator technology that they were comparing against in this trial, is a static image. This is a non-static image, and it's part of the USP, is you can watch the gas then go into the lungs and then exchange with the blood. And all of those things are novel.
Yeah, so it can see, obviously, the image, and apparently it's like the image is up to 100,000 times better, and it can also show the function of the lung, regional and sort of imagery, which as yet, you know, is not kind of available. So it's quite groundbreaking, isn't it? And it has the potential. I think the share price went up by 20% this morning straight away, and then I think some traders came in and started selling off. But I'm thinking, I don't really understand the potential of this, because I think Richard said in the RNS, you know, in America they spend $150 billion annually in this area.
Yes, that's the burden of disease. I mean, that is a big number. It is also a big, you know, lung conditions are a big area, big, you know, and the biggest ones being asthma and COPD, but there are many other ones, you know, for example, cystic fibrosis, you know, which are orphan indications, but even by orphan indication standards, it's a big orphan indication. There are many, many, many lung conditions. What this does is it's exactly a step above an overarching new technology. Indeed, you put your finger on it. It's a step forward in observing the functioning of the lung. And, you know, so ventilation is one element. So you can see the gas go into the lung and see if there are any blockages in certain parts of the lung. The resolution, you're right, is much, much higher. It's a very, very precise lung imaging technology. And then more importantly, and this is really, really interesting, is that it allows you to watch how the lungs function. That's namely in terms of gas exchange with the blood. So sometimes you have good ventilation of lungs, but you don't have gas exchange because there's something wrong with the lining. So for example, one area of disorder is lung fibrosis, and that's a good example where you have good ventilation of the lung and then poor gas exchange. So, you know, this technology allows you to do many, many new things that weren't possible previously. And now they've just completed the last stage, if you like, of the clinical program, and now they will be filing to the FDA for approval. And once they get that, which, you know, we expect somewhere between about, I guess, 18 months from now, roughly, they're planning to file in Q3, and then it's about 12 months after that that they should receive an answer from the FDA. After that, they will launch into, you know, specialist pulmonary clinics, which target, I would say, you know, patients that have some kind of specific issue with their lungs. So these are the top clinics in pulmonary disease, and that get referrals from regionally to them. But again, you know, and this is, you were talking about why we believe the company's undervalued is because you don't need to sell very many machines to have a very, very good business model. Mm. And specifically, again, it's because of the gas pull through, which is the xenon gas. So currently they are already selling machines, but now they'll be able to sell machines and then get paid for every scan that's used because they'll have their xenon gas pull through. And that's the real opportunity here. So today's milestone is the biggest milestone that the company's ever, you know, it's their biggest achievement to date. Once they get approval, they'll be able to launch for clinical use as opposed to for research use, which is where they're selling machines currently. And then that clinical use allows the company to bill for every scan that's done because they'll be using their drug as part of this drug device combination. Yeah. So it's a big day for the company. The next big milestone will be the FDA approval. And then after that, it'll all be about commercial launch.
Yeah, and it's worth saying, I think this phase three was probably, even like for a phase three, it was quite low risk. It probably is the biggest risk, isn't it? Because if I'm correct, I think the trial was set up with the help of the FDA, wasn't it? So they exactly, you know, knew what they had to achieve.
Correct, exactly. So the clinical the regulatory pathway was established in correspondence with the FDA, and that's why they went this route of the drug device combination. And it was as pre-agreed with the FDA how the parameters of the trial. So now another good thing that's in this announcement is that they're going to do a pre-NDA meeting. I know there's a lot of acronyms. I know we're throwing a lot of technical terms, but an NDA meeting, an NDA is the new drug application, which is the application that they file now, okay, which is they're planning in Q3, to then wait to submit to the FDA for approval for this drug. They then get their answer 12 months after that. But you can also do what's known as a pre-NDA meeting, which is what they're proposing to do, where they're going to go see the FDA with their data from these results, which is very strong. Today's data is very, very strong, and it's very clean. They're going to go to the FDA to discuss this, their application. And what I like the most about that is then they'll be filing an NDA with a lot more certainty as to exactly what the FDA wants in that NDA filing. So it's, you know, I find that a good step, a further step in de-risking. So the pre-NDA meeting is something that's relatively, it's new. It was put out in this announcement. And I like that because it'll give more certainty to their application.
Yeah, exactly. And let's say that all goes well. Is it any way of valuing this company in the next 3 to 5 years? How do you do that?
Yeah, okay. So look, you know, we've discussed all the technical elements of the application and you know, the drug device combination. But really, you know, the essence of this business is, you know, how many of these machines can they sell? Mm-hmm. You know, the best way to look at this, and we've discussed this in the past, I think, with you, Justin, is that, mm-hmm. you know, there's 11,000 installed MR machines in the U.S. currently. And obviously, they're filing for a U.S. approval clinical launch, clinical use. Now, we're only talking about 70 or 80 machines needing to be installed to make this a very, very profitable business. And this all comes back to this drug device combination. Once you get clinical approval, you can then sell xenon gas as a drug, and only Polarian can, using their machine. So, you know, that is the key to their business model. And that's why once you get 70 or 80 machines, in fact, based on our own forecast, if you get 10 or 15 machines installed, you'll have, on basic estimates, on very conservative estimates of numbers of scan per institution, you know, you should have a profitable business. On 70 to 80 machines, we're looking at a business that, you know, has turnover of in the tens of millions and, you know, proper EBITDA. So it's on 11,000 MR machines as a target audience. Now, obviously, you won't go for all 11,000. You'll go for the top clinics, as I was describing earlier, the top pulmonary clinics. But you only need to sell 70 or 80 to have a proper business. And then, you know, again, it registers on, you know, you start to appear on the radar of large medical devices businesses. And in fact, one of the board members, Jonathan Ellis, just sold another business for $450 million, again, in medical imaging. It's interesting, just the read across there is that he was also at this technology, Polarian's technology, came out of GE. Jonathan Ellis's other company, Blue Earth Diagnostics, came out of GE, and Jonathan was familiar with both technologies. So it'd be great to see the same thing repeat itself. So you're back to your point of, you know, can something like this sell in the hundreds of millions? Well, one board member just did so with another business from the same stable, which was General Electric.
Wow. And when you think of it, it's you know, it reassures you confidence-wise if you're a shareholder that the fact is Dr. Jonathan Ellis bought more shares, you know, recently, and he upped his holding.
Absolutely.
And so he now holds 1.64%. But he's got about, I think, about 700 grand worth of shares, which for a non-exec director is a big chunk. Well, in anyone's game is a big chunk, but I mean, for a non-exec.
Yeah,
and
well,
he, like you said, he knows the business, doesn't he? You know, so...
He knows the business, he was at General Electric when both technologies were being developed. And, you know, the Blue Earth Diagnostic story is, look, I don't want to, you know, digress too much on Blue Earth, but it's called Blue Earth Diagnostics, and it came from GE, much like Polarian's technology came from GE. And the technologies, they're completely different, unrelated technologies, but all in medical imaging. They're from the medical imaging department of GE Healthcare. And Jonathan Ellis was at GE Healthcare. So he knew both technologies. And we saw what he did with Blue Earth Diagnostics. And the hope is that, you know, the read across there is that it's the same people involved and the same stable being GE Technologies.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, he knows what he's doing, and he's been buying a big chunk of shares. So
exactly, supported by the fact that he's buying a lot. Exactly, buying a lot of the Polarian shares. So it's all very encouraging. To me, you're looking, you know, your question being, what is the potential for this technology? Well, you know, I believe that that's the kind of potential we have here. It's a much bigger indication, by the way, than it's far more. It has far more reach across all pulmonary indications. The market potential for this technology is bigger than Blue Earth Diagnostics, than that of Blue Earth. And that's, you know, that's just a fact.
Yeah. And you know what? Like you said, 11,000 MRIs, and even if they get 1% of that market, that's 110. You know, like you say, they're profitable in what, low double digit figures. So if they get to like even 1% of that market in the US, and of course you've got Europe, which is twice as big, the Far East, which is 10 times as big. So
exactly.
The potential is massive, isn't it? So
it is definitely, it genuinely is, and you know, the company will in its early days, you know, provided approval, they get FDA approval. There's, you know, we've discussed the risk of around that, not very high in our opinion. The rollout strategy really is to take it step by step and target, you know, pulmonary, ultra specialized pulmonary clinics first. You know, these are top hospitals that, you know, get all of the local regional referral to them. So on our estimates, you know, these machines shouldn't be too difficult to place in the first, for the first 100, if you see what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And then, you know, then that's just the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvelous stuff. Vadim, thanks for that, fella. And hopefully we'll speak again in not too distant future. Thanks a lot.
Excellent. Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now, talking about some rubbish stocks, is Alan Green, CEO of Brands Communication.
Morning, Justin. Well, that's a great put down from the start. Thank you.
No, it's going to be fair. They're not all rubbish. They're just the majority. Right.
Just some of them.
Well, listen, that's stocks and shares, see? I mean, I always think this. I think it's hilarious. Not hilarious, but that's the wrong word. Maybe I'm infected by something. But I think it's, you know, highly amusing, really, sometimes, or odd that people think they can just come into investing. You know, they see other people do it or trading and make money overnight. They can be an expert overnight, you know. And it's not like that. It's like any other profession, trade, you know. I wouldn't expect just to start plumbing someone's house, you know, having just read a book for half an hour. Or, you know, it doesn't happen. It takes years and years of practice. You know, I wouldn't walk into a surgeon's theatre with a scalpel and do brain surgery. I wouldn't expect to just step into Wimbledon final. Everything, you know, like this, I can't build a wall. I can't build a house. I wouldn't even attempt it. So why do people think they can just start trading and investing without any experience whatsoever, you know? I wouldn't touch electrics. And now there's a law against touching electrics. There should be a law, I think, in investing or some kind of guidelines, you know, at least telling you. And even when you're young, if you start investing, you should have basic guidelines, you know, because money is everything we live on. We can't survive without money. It's essential. So to be throwing it away on high risk, against odds investments, or the punts, really, it's ridiculous. Yeah. You know? So it's just hard, isn't it? You know, it's not easy.
I think the thing is, you can the secret to success in the market, it's timing as much as anything else. It's actually
time
getting
in
into
the market. Yes, do you know what? Can we say one thing? I on my last video, I said, listen, if you're a private investor and you've been losing money and you literally, you know, don't know how to make money. So first of all, I believe if you are a part-time investor and that is, you've got a proper job doing something else, but you're trying to make some money, you know, trying to make some money, a pension or get a bit rich or whatever. I said, there's only one guaranteed way of making money in the stock market, and that's scaling in over a long period of time into something that's very diversified, like a fund, a low-cost fund, and you guarantee you'll have a nice return when you retire. And then I suggest you hold your birthday percentage of your portfolio in a fund. So the more that goes up, this guy came back, fair play, a guy called Martin came back to me and said, I think you should hold more than that, essentially. And most people are not into. I said, well, no, listen, you don't understand my audience. The audience of people I talk to who watch my videos, the majority of them are in small cap investors, and some of them hold one stock. And that's it. Entire portfolios in one stock. And it can be as risky as an oil and gas explorer. And I think, you're nuts. Oh, that's like putting your entire savings on a non-favorite horse. An odds against horse, 10 to 1, 5 to 1. You wouldn't do that because it's on the stock market. It's fine. So I'm trying to say, you know, have a backbone. Majority of stocks, or close to majority of stocks, in a portfolio or investments in a fund, I mean, and the rest then you can have a little dabble, but then never put more than 10% in one company, you know?
It also doesn't matter how well established the stock is. There was the well-documented case during the credit crunch where some guy had invested all of his SIP into Lloyd's Bank, and of course he put about £500,000 in, and by the end of the credit crunch it was down to about £20,000, and he tried to get his case heard and to get some sort of conversation from the provider, and of course the guy was, you know, just completely wasting his time. But it just goes to show, it doesn't matter how well established the stock is. If you're on the stock market, any company running a business, there are risks there all the time, and you have to have a balanced portfolio. And certainly a very old friend of mine started investing in the mid-noughties and came into the market with his pensions. And he's an engineer by trade, very analytical, you know, very dispassionate about what he does. And he just looks at everything he invests in as instruments. It's all about the entry point and the exit point. You never get involved with the stock. You know, don't get involved with the hype and you know, the future potential. Look at it as a trading instrument for you. You've got an entry point, you've got an exit point, and to coin the old saying in the stock market, no one ever went broke taking a profit. That's what you've got to remember. I mean, you know, I've made money on stocks, I've lost money on stocks, and, you know, you're right, your strategy evolves as you get older. And I think naturally, you know, as you get older, you're less prone to, or you're less you're less prone to taking risks. You're looking at securing the capital that you have, and you're looking at steady growth. And the best way to do that, I believe, is to select a series of funds and spread across there, and then leave a small amount of your portfolio for good dividend-paying stocks, and an even smaller amount of your portfolio for adventurous punts into small cap companies, you know, which could come good. But you know, as we know, in this marketplace, particularly with AIM over the past year, it's had a pretty awful year, and it's very, very hard to make money. So you know, that's but certainly my strategy.
But I did 120%.
Well, that's very good, Justin.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you very much.
that's a great return. That's a great return. But you see, that's as much down to the psychology of trading as anything else. And I think I'm full time though,
pretty much. You know, all I do is talk about stocks. I talk about stocks about people, and so I'm immersed in it completely. It's like, you know, it's like anything. If you put me in an office with someone working full time, I wouldn't know how to do their job. So it's you know, that's the thing. It's like that old do you remember Get Carter with McCain, when that guy comes up to me and said, "Listen, son, don't mess with me, I do this for a living, okay? You're overweight and you're out of practice, you know?" And literally the guy thought he could take him on, and he beat him up, you know? So it's like that. It's basically, people do things for a living. I couldn't walk into a garage workshop now with mechanics and just start, you know, tuning a car or looking for something wrong with an engine. I couldn't do that. I wouldn't have a clue. So, you know, so it's all about time and experience, but I would suggest diversifying into funds. And like I said, I got funds. I own about... In fact, I've just bought a fund, and this is a tip for you, Al. Here we go. It's a cracking safe tip, right? I guarantee you this will make you money, all right? Start scaling in to an ETF called COPA, copper.
COPA. Go on, then. Tell me about copper.
It's basically copper ETF. But copper has been so oversold. If you look at my charts, I tweeted out a chart yesterday on Twitter, massively oversold because of the China coronavirus. Now, of course, why, a friend of mine, Paddy, on our WhatsApp group said, why is it falling? Because of China. Copper is leveraged to global growth, essentially. Whenever you build something, copper's needed in the wiring, everything at all. Now, there's going to be a lot of copper demand next few years for electric vehicles because they take three times the amount of copper as normal vehicles, right? China is the big global growth story. It's the biggest country, you know, expanding at 6% at the moment. That's massive for economy their size. Every commodity is leveraged to copper's growth. So they consume half the world's commodities, half of the world's copper. So whenever they start to slow down, copper prices or commodity prices slow down as well. Now, this coronavirus, at the moment, we are at the height of uncertainty. We don't know how many people this is affecting, what the end figure could be, death toll-wise. But it looks to me, if you look at the death toll, it's like slowing down because it's 20 overnight. Previously, it was the same before. It's not speeding up. The number of new cases come on is speeding up. But I just genuinely think most of these people who are killing have health complications anyway, or the elderly. So it's like a flu. So let me just say one thing. Look at the copper price. Just look at it. Very simple. Now, a copper ETF is leveraged to all copper plays, basically. Have a look at it. It's massively oversold. It's now at a sort of, let me just put it on a 3 months low. If you look at the RSI, it's down below, never happens. Down below 30, it's down 25 almost. Never happens. Whenever that happens, it may take a while. That's why I say scale in. But start scaling into copper ETFs, and I believe it's a good long-term hold as well, because copper will be highly demanded when every government in the world is banning fossil fuels for the engine. So everything's got to switch to either electric, which is the main front runner at the moment. There's other options, hydrogen, all that stuff. But electric vehicles is the main one that is getting mass adoption, or getting biggest amount of adoption. So I think, you know, copper's going to be needed. It's going to be demanded. And if you just look at that, the chart on copper cells.
Copper is a key component. Also, gold as well. I think
I've got gold anyways. But that's in case of a slowdown. But that's good. I've got gold. It's going doing well. But copper now, over the next couple of months, will start as soon as we get the slowing numbers coming out of people, you know, fatalities of corona. That will bounce massively. And of course, I think the long term, mid to long term story for copper is very bullish anyway. So what I'm saying is a temporary opportunity here to get in at a good price on the copper ETF. It's COPA is an ETF. It's about ongoing charges is 0.5%, just below that. So it's decent charges, but I think it's a good play.
Well, I think any fund like any fund that you look at, whether it's an ETF or whether it's a or whether it's a fund, you should be looking at something that could potentially double in value over a 4 to 5 year period. And there are numerous cases across the numerous funds that are in the market at the moment. There's the Fundsmith Fund, the Linsell Train, and also one I'm just going to run through now, which we've spoken about on a number of occasions beforehand. This is the Bluefield Solar Income Fund. BSIF is the epicode. It's a renewables fund based in Jersey. Since the IPO, total returns are 65% on a net asset value and total return basis. The company invests across solar assets, so these are solar assets, but the key thing is that they're solar assets in the UK, so these are solar farms in the UK. With that in mind, the company has virtually zero forex exposure because it's UK based. So all of the revenues are in the UK. It's also stated that it will be unaffected by Brexit. A large number of shares are held by institutions. It has an 18-year sort of 18-year debt finance with Aviva 2 to fund its growth. It also attained the Guernsey Green Fund status last April, which is very strict criteria. So it's an alternative. If you're looking at investing into renewables, if your mindset is in that region, then I think this is a very good fund to get involved in. You can look at the chart over a 5 year period. It's just basically top right hand corner stuff all the way. And currently, the fund is trading well ahead of at a premium to net asset value, which isn't necessarily a bad thing because the fund has just consistently performed so well over the period since the IPO. Yeah, so marvelous. Pays out a dividend of 5.5% as well, so that's that's key to me. So if you're going to get decent, sustained, steady growth year on year with a 5.5% dividend yield, it's a very good addition to any portfolio.
What's the ticker there then?
BSIF, Bluefield Solar Income Fund.
Right, not that catchy, is it? But there we are. Anyway, they should try something else. You always need a catchy ticker, because especially when people talk about it on podcasts, it sticks a bit around. Like COPA, COPA. That's a catchy ticker, isn't it?
Yeah, BSIF. Okay, so solar power.
BSIF, like those tapes they used to have years ago when I was a kid. Do the cassettes, tapes, BSIF, is it? Do you remember those cassettes?
BASF, I do indeed,
That's it. Cool. Right, anything else, Al?
Okay, so completely at the other end of the scale, absolutely and completely at the other diametrically opposed to everything Bluefield Solar Income stands for is the company Cranswick. CWK is the epicode. Now, Cranswick, of course, are famous for producing pork. They own numerous pork farms up and down the UK, and they're now at the point where they are self-sufficient in UK pigs processed to in excess of 25%. So they are pretty well self-sufficient as a company. Now, it doesn't matter what your views are on meat.
It
doesn't actually, because I think we have to put across diversity
here. You can't say it doesn't matter what your opinions are on meat. Of course it does. It completely does. Okay, first and foremost, we've had environment agency after environment agency saying we have to cut down at least a fifth of our meat and dairy eating because of climate change. First of all, you've got environmental. What is that? There's also sort of health-wise. Do you know pigs are the reason why antibiotics aren't working anymore? Because if they inject them with so much antibiotics that meat... But if you just went out there eating meat raw as, you die, right? And then thirdly, no pig wants to die.
If that were the case, then pork would be banned.
It's not. Do your research. I'll get the facts on it. I'll get the facts on it right now.
You're a vegan.
I'm not.
Okay, You're a vegetarian. I get that totally. You know, half my family are vegetarians. Absolutely fine. I'm just trying. I'm trying to sort of bring diversity here. So we have a renewable stock, a renewable fund on the one hand, and now we have a company.
Pig killers on the other hand. Pig killers.
Pig killers. Okay, pig killers produces meat. Because of the African swine flu crisis. And also the crisis in China, their sales have rocketed. They are now supplying huge amounts of pork to China because of the swine flu crisis. Does that say something?
Swine flu crisis. We shouldn't be eating it if it's giving us this much problems. This is what coronavirus is all about. Eating animals is bad for us. You know, we've proven that over and over again. It's killing us. You can pick an apple right off a tree. Nature is handing you the apple from its tree. Carrots grow out of the ground. There's nature saying, have some of this, have some of this. Now, you have to chase down a pig against its will and kill it. And then it's not good for you because it's been injected with antibiotics, because it has to be because there's so much disease. Doesn't that make sense to you?
Just, look. I'm not going to talk about the moral issues here at all.
No, not moral. I'm doing health. Yeah. Health reasons. That's health.
We're talking investment. We're not talking health. We're talking about a company. Does it have investment potential? Yes, it does. The company, the stock is currently trading at just under £35 a share. It's been as low as £24 on the year. It pays a dividend yield of 1.7%. Now, it's currently the company is growing in the UK. It's just acquired a farm called Packington Pork, and that's just, as the CEO said, it's reinforced its commitment to the pig and the swine industry in the UK. Now, I get your views, and I get everyone's views.
That's just health, I'm talking about. There's health, there's environmental. You know.
There's a whole range of views. There's a whole range of views, but also the pork industry in the UK employs a huge number of people. You know, and it's a big part of our exports. So I think that there are two sides to this story. I'm just trying to present the investment case for Cranswick. The company is growing. It's had a very strong 6 months. The share price is trading around £25 last July. It's currently trading at just under £35. Been as high as £37 on the year. So, this is a company that I think if you're looking for a diverse spread in your portfolio, I think this is a company worth owning. And it has made steady progress. It pays a dividend. It's well funded, and the company is in very strong shape right now.
We've got to reduce it, and I just think I'm not talking about the ecological thing, right? Listen now, animals in factory farming are prone to illness in large part due to crowded conditions in which they're kept. This is why 80% of all antibiotics produced are consumed by animals. 80% of all antibiotics are consumed by animals. That's phenomenal. That's why antibiotics are becoming less effective on humans because we are eating them and we are building up resistance to them. So it's you know what, we used to think smoking was fine, you know, 40 years ago. Smoke on the tube, on planes, smoke everywhere, fine, everyone. People have a resistance to mind change, the mindset. It's a mindset they've got. It changes, they resist it. But in the end, they realize, oh, hang on, they look back and they think, that was insane, we were actually doing that. And that's what will happen here, I guarantee. In about 20 years' time, there'll be no one eating wild meat.
All the animals that were supplying this meat, what will happen to them?
They will die. Well, I mean, animals have life. They will live their lives in the meadows, running around nicely with their friends, rather than going on a crowded truck to an abattoir. How would you like to spend your last? How would you like to spend your life, huh? Being taken to a meadow with your friends, Alan, or an abattoir in a truck.
So fast forward 20 years. So as we drive around the UK eating our vegetarian burgers,
it won't be vegetarian. It'll be meat. No, lab meat. It'll be meat. It'll be vegetarian.
The fields
meat.
Either side of the motorways, as we sit in our Google cars, being driven to our destination. The fields either side will be chock full of cows and animals, all bleating and mooing and barking and doing whatever they do.
The reason why the animals are there at the moment is because they are bred by humans. They have forced bred.
Right. So we'll just have to find.
So I'm just saying, Cranswick for me is a sell long term. Is a sell unless they go into lab.
Okay. Yeah. Well, there we go.
All
right. Diversity, Jess. That's what it's about.
That's it. So, hang on. What's the market cap are they?
Market cap is 1.8 billion.
God. It's unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, that's it. But this is just steady growth. You know, they've had. Okay. All right. Well, I think we've extolled the pros and the cons of Cranswick enough now. But we're highlighting investable propositions. And I raised this when we spoke in November last year because of the African swine fever, which has, you know, currently 25% of the pork stock in China has been killed because of the swine fever virus. So clearly there is an opportunity there, but this will be entirely dependent on your moral standpoint.
The reason we're getting all these viruses and diseases is because we shouldn't be eating it. Does it make sense? It's bad for us. It's not good for us. It's obvious, isn't it? It's like, if you go swimming in a pool, right, and every time you come out the pool, you literally, you know, got a flu or cold or something, after a while you think that swimming pool is not clean, it's dirty, something wrong with it, I'm not going back in there. You wouldn't keep eating the stuff, or, you know, keep jumping in, would you? It just makes sense to me. Doesn't it make sense to you? When's the last time you were ill from eating a nice bit of fruit or veg?
I think you're being a bit pig-headed about this, but...
Hey!
Clearly I made a bit of a pig's ear of that.
Let's trot on. Is there anything else you want to sell me?
There is. I just want to mention the pharma stock that keeps on giving. That's pharma as in pharmaceutical, not pharma, pigs and all the rest of it. AstraZeneca, AZN, clearly, you know, a British pharmaceutical giant based in Cambridge, employs 6,500 UK employees and supports 35,000 other jobs around the world. So this is the AstraZeneca. If you're investing into FTSE 100 stocks, then probably over the years the two pharma stocks that would have caught your eye are AstraZeneca and GlaxoSmithKline, and both iconic names, you know, long established. But AstraZeneca, you put the two side by side on a share price performance chart, and AstraZeneca has literally blasted off into the ionosphere over the past few years. I bought into the stock when it was 40 quid a share. It's currently trading at £75 a share, and the growth shows no signs of slowing down. So we have a huge centre at Cambridge. It collaborates, obviously. It's got a global headquarters and works in conjunction with Cambridge University. It's got global collaborations with peer companies, biotechs, academia, all around the world, and it focuses on its philosophy at heart is the five R's, which is right target, right patient, right treatment, right tissue, right safety, and right commercials. So the key divisions are oncology, cardiovascular, renal, and metabolic, and then the respiratory diseases such as asthma, COPD, IPF, and chronic cough. The growth, as I say, is well documented. It's had a very strong run in January. The company announced that phase 3 Brilinta, which basically is a treatment in conjunction with aspirin that in testing has produced a meaningful fall in the risk of the primary composite endpoint of stroke and death. So it's been trialed on patients at phase 3, and the data from Brilinta is very, very strong. So that's probably the next one that will receive US FDA approval and will go into the market. A strong result from Enhertu at phase 2, which is a gastric cancer drug, and that's also performed very well. That's just just one tiny part of what Astra do. That, you know, this is a company that has a market cap of $99 billion, which is astonishing. And you think, goodness me, how can it keep on growing? But it does. You know, it's the company's making acquisitions, and it's just an incredibly well-run organization. And it's a great British success story. Dividend yield of 2.8%, and I've held this stock, as I say, you know, for a number of years, and I will continue to hold. It's outperformed everything else. The reason I brought this up now is full year results are due February the 14th, and the stock goes ex-dividend on February 27th. So you probably want to buy this on a dip, but if you look at the chart, it rises, it falls, it rises and falls, and it's just a series of lower highs across the years. So, unless there's a complete disaster in the pharma marketplace, this company is very well run. And if you're looking to add your portfolio with a company that will continue growing and will pay a decent dividend, then you might want to consider this before February 27th.
Marvellous stuff. Cheers, Al. Speak to you next week.
Bye-bye.
OK, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Clough Natural Resources, down 3% to 1.575 pence. At four, Seeing Machines, non-move at 4.75 pence. At three, N4 Pharma, down 5.5% to 3.4 pence. At two, Immu Pharma. It is IMM, sticker there. IMM, I should say. Up 1.3% to 13.96 pence. And the number one most followed company is Polarian Imaging, POLX, as we discussed on the podcast. And big news today, very big news. And as, you know, Vadim talked about, could be a massive company, this. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Itaconix, as from yesterday, introduction of new detergent polymer. At four, Infostrata, extension of exclusivity agreement. At three, N4 Pharma, update on Nuvec process improvements. At two, Hurricane Energy, trading and operational update. And number one is Polarian Imaging, positive pivotal phase 3 clinical trial results. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.